Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Tim Mullaney with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Alliance CEO Greg Salamito, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase. Homecare Homebase is powerful, cloud-based home health software, streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. So Alliance Homecare has made a name for itself by offering high-end services to its clientele in New York City and the surrounding area. And the company's more than doubled its revenue in recent years, providing medical and non-medical home care. Its services include Alliance Concierge, through which a cross-functional team provides a high level of personalized care and care management for clients. I spoke with Alliance's CEO and co-founder, Greg Salamito, about how he went from the world of investment banking to home care, and some of the innovative partnerships that Alliance has forged. And I've also talked to him about what drove the company's expansion in the last several years. All right, Greg, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Excited to jump in. To start, I want to just get a little more information about your background and what brought you to home care. So to start out, I know Alliance is based in the New York City area. Is that where you're from originally? Did you grow up there?
Yes, that's correct. And yeah, thank you for having me. I did. I grew up in the area. I grew up just north of the city in an area called Rockland County, which is about 30 minutes north of New York.
Great. And then you went to Emory University in Atlanta for college. Is that right?
That's right. I went to Emory in Atlanta. I graduated in class of 95.
And what did you study there?
I actually studied European history, which is not so relevant.
I was going to say, that's a really natural, of course you ended up running a home care company.
I was pre-med for a couple of years. To be honest, I wanted to be an animal doctor, but I guess social life and independence got the best of me. And I ended up moving into European history, which I really loved. I wasn't going to do anything professionally with it, other than teach or maybe go to law school, but I never had interest in being a lawyer.
That's interesting. I was expecting you to say that you studied finance because I believe you went on to have a career in finance for a number of years after college. Is that right?
I did. I actually, while I was going to school, a friend of mine that was a little older worked in finance down there and gave me my first internship. And I really enjoyed the stock market and all the things around the financial industry, just sort of investing and that kind of drew me in. The stock market drew me in an interest in it. So I started finding work and professional life in the financial world.
Great. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but the information that I have is that you were a vice president at Lehman Brothers for about 9 years, and then went on to be a vice president at Deutsche Bank for about 5 years. So that was 14 plus years with some really big sort of giants of the financial world before you went on to found Alliance Homecare. So I guess I'm curious if you always felt like you had an entrepreneurial itch to start your own business during that time when you were working for those, for Lehman and for Deutsche.
I would say that I didn't have an entrepreneurial niche while I was working through that, but the experience, and I guess we can get into it shortly, but the experience in helping support my grandmother through her process hit close to home, and I developed the thought around providing a better type of care model during that process. So I don't think I was always entrepreneurially driven, but I have very much enjoyed the process and being my own boss and sort of driving the direction of my own brand.
Great. So yeah, let's get into that. I think you're not unique in having a personal experience sort of make you want to improve the home care landscape, but maybe unique in actually going out and starting your own company to do that. So what was that experience like, and what tipped the scales for you to I guess, take the risk to start Alliance?
So yeah, that's a good question. From my experience, the development of our company came from a very personal experience, and you'll find that or I have found that it's very common or somewhat common as I reach deeper into the healthcare world and certainly the caregiving world, our side of healthcare. A lot of people come from a personal experience that drove them towards this direction. So for me, I, like you mentioned, I was working in finance. I worked at Lehman Brothers for a number of years in Japan. And I moved home in 2002, not because I wanted to move home, but really I just wanted to be closer to my grandmother. She was getting older and she was in her mid-80s. She was 85. And I just knew she wasn't going to be here forever. So I moved home to be close to her. And ultimately, about a year later, she developed Alzheimer's. And for the next 5 years, I was her quarterback. I really took care of her. And during those 5 years, I really developed a interest in this world of caregiving. And I really felt that we could develop something that was a higher level of professionalism than what I had, the options that I had at my disposal at the time.
That's interesting. I didn't realize you had been in Japan. That's, I think we think of it as a culture that maybe has a different sort of respect for their older adults. Is that something that you were at all cognizant of when you were living there? Or was that not on your radar since you were focused on your finance career?
No, that's a really interesting point. 100% the Japanese culture really raises up their elders to a very high level of respect. And that is really ingrained in that society. It's really fantastic. So I'm sure that definitely gave me some supportive supportive drive. But I think the main driver for me was the intense relationship of closeness I had with my grandparents. You know, really, they raised me. I was very close with them growing up. And at the age of 13, I moved in with them full time. So they really were they acted as my parents and my role model. And they made a lot of sacrifices for me to have a good education and to be raised with a good groundwork and a good framework. And I owe a lot of who I am to them. So when my grandfather passed away when I was in high school, he developed ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. And he got that my junior year around the holiday time. And he died about 18 months later. And that was my first experience of home care, if you will. We had full-time care. But then after he passed away, my grandmother and I remained very close. And so a lot of my interest was just in making sure she was safe and in a good environment.
Got it. So can you describe those early years of Alliance and how you sort of started the company? Did you sort of bootstrap it? Did you have investors? And I imagine, you know, I've interviewed some other healthcare entrepreneurs, and I assume this goes for all entrepreneurs, that there are some scary moments and sleepless nights early on. So wondering what that experience was like for you.
Sure. So I guess to look at our history, going back to my grandmother's situation, I formed the company with two close friends that I grew up with. They're both nurses. They both had extensive clinical experience from Columbia. They work in the neuro ICU at Columbia, and one of them still works there one day a month. But the two of them and myself really embraced my grandmother, and they helped me through that time period a lot. And I started forming the idea of this company and approached them about it. So the three of us started it together. For the first number of years, 2006, we actually incorporated our business, and it took us 3 years to get licensed. But during that time period, all three of us remained, we had primary jobs. I was still working in banking, as you highlighted before, and doing this on the side, as were Michelle and Diane. Michelle worked at the hospital and Diane worked at a pharmaceutical company. So the three of us had primary jobs and we did this on the side. So we fully bootstrapped it. We didn't take external investment. We really just self-funded everything. And a lot of it was just time, effort, and energy, not so much finances. There were, of course, fees to set up a website and to incorporate ourselves with attorneys. We had to file paperwork with the Department of Health. But far and wide, it was really just the investment of time, which is, as we know, super important and not replaceable.
Absolutely. So what was the, this goes back to the experience you had with your grandparents and seeing areas that could be improved in home care. So what were those areas? What were the goals in starting the company that you really wanted to achieve in order to provide a better experience for other people?
So I would say first and foremost, my biggest area was in quality caregivers. So during those 5 years, I probably hired and fired about six different caregivers. And I think the sixth one was the charm, and she stayed with us for almost 3 years. And then she moved away. And eventually I moved my grandmother to an assisted living facility, which I had a very good experience at. So I saw a window into home care and then also an assisted or independent living facility. But the caregiver itself is probably the biggest area that I found that I wanted to make a difference. And I really wanted to set a higher benchmark and bar for the quality of those that take care of your loved ones. So caregivers is one. And then from my experience during that time, I was paying her bills, taking her to the doctor, coordinating her living arrangements and transportation. There's a lot that goes into home care that people don't understand until they go through it. So from that perspective, care management or having a care supervisor is really critical to a healthy home care environment. So just finding good caregivers and putting them in is important, but it's not at all the full equation. For us, finding a care manager that would oversee the situation like I did with my grandmother, and then coordinate across the family to understand and keep them abreast of what's going on and the options they had to choose and kind of just how things were going, a partner in that journey. So for us, our biggest thing was providing oversight or supervision on top of the care.
And caregivers makes sense that is such a crucial piece of the puzzle, but it also seems like the biggest challenge we hear often from home care providers, because the demand for caregivers so far exceeds the supply of high quality caregivers. So given that situation, how have you managed to meet that goal of only sort of hiring the best?
Right. Well, it's a great question. From the first couple of years of business for us, I really took the lead on the caregiver side of our business. Michelle and Diane had a large group of nurses that they worked with in the hospital. So through 1 and 2 degrees of separation, they had a sizable number of nurses that worked for us. But on the caregiver side, I took the lead. I probably interviewed the first 600 or 700 caregivers that came through Alliance. And what I found was that even though I was asking the same questions and I was obviously finding out if they're legal to work here and they are certified and that certification is still current, all of the main criteria any home care company would ask, I would also really gauge the softer side of their nurturing ability. Were they positive? Did they smile? Were they friendly? And what it came down to was, would I hire them for my grandmother or not? So my grandmother literally became the benchmark of me saying yes or no. My grandmother was very dignified. She was English and very proper. And so she really, really expected to look a certain way when she left the house and to have her hair done and her clothing in good shape. And so I would really look for caregivers that would understand that and be able to provide the kind of care that my grandmother would want in a caregiver. So that became the benchmark. And then as we grew and we had other staff that were doing recruiting and interviewing, we still used my grandmother or the grandma rule. And we actually federally trademarked it. We own the rights to the grandma rule, which is meaningful to us only. But it really just, it says that anybody that we put into the field to work for our clients, we feel comfortable with them taking care of our family. And I think that that means something.
Great. I didn't realize you had federally trademarked the grandma rule. That's pretty cool. So another piece of the caregiver puzzle, I assume, has to be that in order to attract the best and retain them, they have to feel engaged and they also have to be paid well. And I think that maybe that now is a good time to bring up the, I think Alliance has become known for being sort of a concierge care provider. I think that I've seen the phrase white glove care applied to the company. And I think this is information that you've given me in the past, and you can confirm if it's correct or not. But I think that the clients for Alliance tend to pay between $50,000 and $100,000 a year for up to 40 to 50 hours of staffing, whereas the norm in your markets for that level would be closer to $40,000 to $80,000. So it is a higher level clientele maybe in terms of what they can afford, and maybe you're passing some of that on to in terms of paying benefits to caregivers. Am I making that, is that assumption fair or correct?
Yeah, no, that assumption is fair. The industry far and wide really breaks down to hourly. And we've realized that in order to get really good caregivers, we really need to pay them a good wage. And they do a very hard job. They are what makes our company move forward. And it really is. I've done actual caregiving in addition to just hiring and supervising. I actually did the seventh day every Sunday for 3 years. I was my grandmother's caregiver. So I know what it's like. And as things get more advanced with Alzheimer's or dementia, et cetera, it becomes very challenging. So people need to make a decent living to do that hard work. So we've always prided ourselves on paying top dollar to caregivers once we found really good ones. So over the years, the general industry typically would pay $10 or $11 an hour. And now obviously that started to become raised over wage parity and labor law changes. But from going back before those labor laws, we were starting people off at $14 an hour and often paying 16, 18 and upwards of 20, for people that had really good experience with us. And, we typically would pay 40 to 100% more in salary than the common industry, would. So that would initially, drive more traffic to us, but that wasn't the reason we did it. We did it just because we felt they deserved it. And the type of care that we wanted to provide to our clients, although they were paying privately, required paying a higher salary.
And despite paying more to the caregivers, it seems like Alliance is certainly still driving a healthy bottom line. The numbers I have just in terms of revenue are that in 2014, it was around $6 million. And now 4 years later, that's up to about $15 million. Is that right?
That is correct. We have grown in a bit of size and scale, and we finished out 2017 rather at $15 million. And I really would attribute that to a few things, but mainly just developing deeper ties in the healthcare system and the hospitals. We started becoming large enough that we could actually service hospitals appropriately. So we do have relationships now taking discharges from a number of the top hospitals in the city. But we also provide high-level private duty nursing, which is not super common in our industry. Most home care companies provide home health aides. We do that, but we also provide shift nurses as well. It's probably about 50% of what we do.
And has that been a service from the very beginning of the company, or was that something that's been added more recently?
Actually, it has. Our original name was Alliance Nursing, and we had changed it about 2 years in. I think in 2011, we changed it to Alliance Home Care because people thought we only provided nurses, and we wanted to make sure that they knew we were a broad-based home care company that provided both sides of those services. But the first name of our company was Alliance Nursing. So we have a heavy focus on private duty nursing care.
That's interesting. And do you think that in terms of getting more of that hospital business, I know you said part of it was just you achieving a certain scale, which makes sense. Do you have any sense that it's also the hospitals starting to be more,
I guess, aware of their home care partners and looking for high quality partners that can keep readmissions down, et cetera. I feel like that's a big trend we've been reporting on for years coming out of some of the Affordable Care Act changes.
Yeah, no, I think it's probably a combination of those two. Obviously, you have to have the size to be able to handle volume or to be able to handle requests that come. So if you get a referral from a hospital system and you're not able to supply that business, mm-hmm. that word travels very quickly and it doesn't come again. So, but from our perspective, because we are high quality and we have a lot of care management oversight to every single case we have, every one of our clients gets a nurse and a care manager. So that's a lot of care, honestly, that we provide. And even though our rate is a bit higher, we provide a lot more service. So people that want quality appreciate that. And because of that oversight, the readmission rates for our home care system are extremely low. We measured it last year at the end of 2017, and our readmission rate was 3%. The industry average is 15%, and Medicare is 20%. So one in every five discharges that goes into Medicare lands back in the hospital within 30 days. And for us, it was a 3% number. So I think that the hospitals are starting to feel our quality, and that makes a difference.
Yeah, that's incredibly low. So another piece of serving this, the clientele that you do is, I think their expectations, you know, they might be paying more, but then they expect a lot in return, I think. And one of the things that we've been reporting on kind of an ongoing basis with Alliance is all of the interesting partnerships that you forged, I think, to provide a broad base of services to your clientele. So we've reported on things like, the personal chef service that you offer to clients and home dental work, things like that. Can you maybe just describe the thinking behind creating these partnerships and how it works operationally to offer these different services to your clients?
Sure. So I think it became clear to us about 3 years ago, the importance of valuable partners. In home care, like I said before, the needs in the home are far extend beyond just the core services that we provide. So we have, you know, like I said, nurses and caregivers and supervisors, care managers overseeing all of it. But the needs for somebody when they enter into the phase of life requiring home care or long-term care in the home really start becoming fairly extensive. So as we learned more about that, we developed relationships over the years with a number of service providers and felt strongly that we just wanted to find people that treated their clients like we treat ours. They understood responsiveness and being there on time and true to your word and providing a high quality of trustworthy service and really just showing up and being there. And so we vetted a number of partners over the years. And we continue to vet. There's literally a list of service providers, and that is a dynamic list. It doesn't stay stationary. People really have to earn their right to work with us, just like we earn our right to work with our clients. A number of service types have really emerged over the last few years to us to be the most common types of needs. So I can state them if you would like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So there really are dozens of services and types, but there are really five that we concentrate on that are most common. So the first and foremost is PTOT, and that is very, really critical in the last few years of life when you need to maintain your strength, maintain your flexibility. Fall risk is probably the number one reason why anybody lands in the hospital or breaks a hip or ends up needing home care is because they fell or they had an incident and realized that it wasn't really safe for them to be alone, or maybe they needed somebody there at night when they went to the bathroom many times. So PTOT was number one. The second area is actually two parts. which is food. So the food program for us, this is something that was really important for my grandmother and for me. It always took up a lot of time and space for us, but it isn't something that home care approaches. There's a few reasons for that, but really it's not easy to provide some kind of food solutions for clients. So it's not usually not approached. So for us, in the way that we've handled it, we have nutritionists or registered dietitians that go in initially, and they'll understand kind of the medical situation that's going on and any directives that come. So we call them kind of the food doctor. And then once they go in, they work lockstep with an organic chef company called Tohi Wellness that we work with. And Tohi then goes in and tries to create a fun atmosphere, all with the intended purpose of providing better food. So they have a shopping excursion in the area. They'll look up, you know, a healthy food store or supermarket in the vicinity of the residence of the client. They will then engage in a cooking class with the caregivers, the client, their spouse, if relevant, and children or any family members that want to participate. And so they create a cooking class, and then they go back on a repeat method for some period of time to make sure that the caregiver has more support, and we can actually train them to do a slightly more advanced culinary support in the home that can lead to a better outcome for the client.
That's great. Can I interrupt you there with a question? So it seems like the PTOT is a service that sure. It's sort of like if you need it, you need it, versus the food seems like something that might seem to someone like a nice to have, especially in a place like New York where you can order from, you know, the world's best restaurants 24/7. So is there, I guess, how are you offering these services, to clients? Is it, I assume that it's sort of, you present it to them and then they sort of select it, whether they want to receive it or not. And if they do, then maybe they're paying, some specific amount to receive that service.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I would certainly agree with you that PT is more of a mandatory service in certain circumstances, and food is more of a nice to have. Although I'm sure people could argue or debate the value of food as medicine and the importance of somebody mm-hmm. paying attention to it, especially when there's cognitive decline. You have vulnerable people that aren't able to make those decisions. So even though they live in the city and they have access to those amazing restaurants, they may not understand how to call them, how to engage them, or what to look for when they're looking through a menu. So those things start to become a little bit more necessary, if you will, than nice to have when you have various circumstances that we often deal with. But nevertheless, all services that we provide, again, are just strong suggestions by us, but never mandatory. We do not have any fee-sharing arrangements with any of our service providers. They're literally independently operating, and we just know that their service provides value, and we feel better about at least making the introduction to those services. And then the clients, of course, can always make their own decisions as private customers. So they're always allowed to, you know, decline any service we suggest. But our care managers really, when they go in to assess at the beginning of the engagement, really look broadly at their safety in the home and all of the other ways that they're handling food and handling their physical condition. And they make suggestions to the family, and the family is always willing to either participate or not. It's up to them.
Great. So I want to hear about the other partnerships or services that you think are making the biggest difference, but also have an eye on the clock and want to make sure we get to talk about some of the technology things you're doing. So can you maybe briefly share what those other services are?
Sure. Yeah. So the other two that are most common for us, one is mental health. So obviously every one of our clients, often they're going through a transitional period, losing control, losing independence, et cetera. Could be the client, it could be the spouse that's well, that is managing their spouse that isn't, that's going through transition, or the children. So we've introduced geriatric psychology to our clients, and it's been enormously popular. I would say about 30% of our clients have some kind of visitation from a mental health expert, and they see them either on a weekly or a bi-monthly basis, as needed, obviously. But that's been really helpful. Mental health is something that often gets forgotten about, but is really critical in addition to your physical well-being and spiritual engagement. And the last was legal. Again, there's a lot of documents that should be in place with families, and sometimes they don't know what they are, or they have them, but they could be dated. So I'm talking about healthcare proxy, power of attorney, and advance directives. Those are documents that really should be in place whenever somebody is receiving home care. It's not a legal requirement, but it is ethical requirement if you are servicing people that have cognitive failure. So it's something that comes up often. So we tend to refer people to various elder care attorneys to make sure that their documents are in place and in good working order.
Great. So technology is another sort of important area, I think, of increasing focus for home care companies, and Alliance is no exception to that. And we had good timing for this podcast because just this morning I saw come across the wire a press release about the launch of Alliance's new program that involves equipping clients with a tablet. So I want to let you talk about what that is, but maybe I can just read from the press release about what is included in this tablet. So this is from the press release. It includes a caregiver check-in, check-out, the ability to view documents and care plans, and internet connectivity to visit favorite websites. Clients are able to use it to track daily mood, pain, sleep, and appetite, watch wellness programming, do basic exercises, access family photos, watch movies on Netflix, read books on Kindle, and listen to favorites like Frank Sinatra or Benny Goodman through Pandora. And another, I think, great detail is that it's called Val, named after your grandmother, Valma. So curious what went into creating this platform and how it's going to be rolled out to the clients.
Yeah, thank you for going through that. I think that the press release kind of summarizes it in good detail, but this is something that has been on our minds for the last 4 years. It's something that I think we've thought about, sketched out, and it's been in development for the last year. It's still new for us in terms of rolling it out. We actually piloted it at the end of last year with about half a dozen clients just to get some initial feedback and activity, et cetera. And now we've decided to roll it out to all of our clients because we really do see the value in it. The purpose of it is really simple. It's to build more transparency into the isolation of home care. Home care often is just delivered in an isolated environment. People don't have access to know what's going on. The children don't know what's going on with mom or dad. Doctors that are servicing them don't really have a window into what's happening with their patients, unless, of course, they're in front of them. So, and of course, home care, it's very difficult to manage clients that are remotely working without having access. So we're very excited about this. We think the opportunities are boundless in terms of where that could go. But at its core right now, it's creating a connectivity machine between ourselves, the clients, and their family members, and the clinicians or physicians that oversee them. So that's it in a nutshell. There's video chat capability. All of our tablets have Wi-Fi built in. So if the client has Wi-Fi, we can connect to theirs. But if not, we provide our own. And so that's not an impediment to putting these in. But it's really exciting to know that we'll be able to connect with our clients on a much more frequent basis.
I'm curious, we've seen some other providers, especially some in New York, some on the West Coast, I think mostly in urban areas where there's a high concentration of potential caregivers, start to think about using technology as a way of connecting clients with caregivers, and sort of allowing clients to look at the universe of available caregivers and maybe choose who they might want to work with that way. Is that anything that Alliance has thought about? Or do you really think that, I've also heard the opposite, that it really requires sort of a high touch process of, you know, much more in person to develop that kind of relationship. So I guess I'm just curious where you kind of fall on that question.
Sure. I mean, you know, the home care business, however you look at it, is very intimate. So there never will be a replacement of physical caregivers, nurses, et cetera, that will do the job that a technology might do. Technology for us is very much an additive or supplemental or augment to our core service, which is caring for people. So this really just for us an added tool that helps us do our job in a better way, and that helps maybe you know, open up the dialogue to some other topics or provide some additional lifestyle services that we enjoy on our iPhones and on our Android devices, just as regular adults not receiving home care. So I think that the elder community really can benefit from some of the advances in technology. And unfortunately, I think it's up to us to try to figure out what to put in front of them, because they're not really able to you know, figure that out on their own. A lot of elders, unfortunately, have a natural fear of technology. But once they start experiencing it and start understanding the benefits of it, that they can talk to their grandkids via Skype and that type of environment, they get much more excited about it. Also the ability to learn and to keep educating themselves.
Yeah, I think that this is a big conversation that's been ongoing, obviously, about the potential for technology and then counterbalanced with what's realistic and what older adults will really embrace. So I believe you were just at an Aging 2.0 event yesterday. Is that right?
That's correct.
Can you describe what that event was like and any sort of takeaways that you have top of mind today coming out of that?
Sure. So that was Aging 2.0 is a national organization that has different regional areas that hold conferences. This one was in New York yesterday. It was hosted by Caring Kind, which is formerly known as the Alzheimer's Association. They spun off and they're now Caring Kind. But they hosted the event, and there were a number of technology providers that were really focused on services and technologies for the elder and mature adult. It wasn't a large event, I did see a few interesting things, but you know, far and wide, I feel that there's a lot in development right now. I think a lot of people are starting to think about the aging population and ways that they can, you know, really create services or value-based services that will help that sector of society. I saw in specific, there was a automated bill pay solution. We do have a financial sort of daily money manager service partner in our current system, but there was an automated version of that, which was interesting. An elder care attorney that actually started the business a couple of years ago, and that was meant to sort of automate some of the billing that goes on for paying your Con Ed bill and utilities, et cetera, all different types of bills that need to be managed while somebody is at home and being taken care of. There was a device that actually propped somebody up. So it actually was a mattress that had an electric lever that allowed somebody to sit upright, which would be very useful for you know, people that are bedridden or need to sit up but don't want to be in a full hospital bed. They can do that now in their living room or other places. So there were a few interesting devices, some of them auditory for people for better hearing over the phone. Some of them were alerts for, you know, and sensors for, you know, people that have fallen or they're called PERS, personal emergency response systems.
Yeah, I'm always struck. I'm interested when I talk to providers about what tech sort of caught their eye. And I think it's noteworthy that you singled out that sort of bill pay technology, because I think we see a lot of sort of grandiose ideas about how voice-activated technology and artificial intelligence and virtual reality is coming in and is going to change the game. And then when you get right down to it, I think sometimes providers say, you know, it'll make a big difference right away if they can just have something to help them pay their bills or, you know, hear on the phone. Like the needs are simple, but the solutions aren't necessarily easy to come by in terms of the ways that technology can just help solve those kinds of problems. So that's interesting. So the podcast is called Disrupt. And so I want to ask you, to close, how do you define disruption? And do you think of Alliance as disrupting home care?
I would say that Alliance is approaching home care in a unique way. Being a concierge home care provider for us really means doing things in a systematic and well thought out type of infrastructure. So as a disruptor, I would say that we're heading towards a path that could disrupt the market. The concept of virtual assisted living is, I would say, something that hasn't really been spoken of before. There are certainly technology advancements and things that are people are introducing into the home care environment. The tablet we have, I think, is disruptive, honestly. I know that there have been other tablet solutions that people have put forward, but I think the way that we're operating and the way that we're looking at it, a virtual assisted living platform is something that I think will really be meaningful to a lot of people. People ultimately want to age in place in their home. So the assisted or independent living facilities are very nice and really can provide a lot of value. My grandmother was in one for a few years and I really enjoyed it. But I think far and wide, people want to stay where they lived as an adult, and we need to be able to provide services that enable them to do so. So our care management oversight and our technology enabling platform as it grows, I think, is going to be something that is unique and that will really add layers of value beyond what the typical industry provide.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Greg.
No problem. I appreciate it being here.
All right. That's terrific. I guess one follow-up question. I'm just curious. I guess it's twofold. One is, does Alliance provide much care in assisted living settings? And then secondarily, we've seen Brightstar Care sort of spun out to create an assisted living model that they're sort of like creating through a franchise model. It's pretty small right now. I think there are only two, but have you thought at all about expanding into more like a community housing based model at all?
We have. There's actually a really powerful model that I can't speak about very much right now, but I guess firstly, the first question, yes, we do. We service clients in a number of different assisted living facilities. It's a smaller piece of our demographic, but we definitely provide care inside of those facilities. But we are speaking to a few providers, one regional provider and one that is national, about a way to kind of really work together to partner. So it's really a depending on how you look at it, could be a very complementary type of a business model.
And that partnership would be that Alliance would come in and provide your sort of home care services within that provider's settings?
Probably more so. I don't want to say too much about it, but more so providing a community extension for people that don't move in. So people that are on the fence and they're trying to figure it out, you know, taking care of them in the home for some period of time and providing them exposure to the community and going from there. But we feel that there's a lot of synergy with the assisted and independent living communities, and that kind of partnership could be really valuable for families through an entire transition. You know, what makes sense today doesn't necessarily make sense 6 months or a year from now. So giving people options is great.
Great. But Alliance, you haven't thought about sort of building or acquiring a building and sort of creating an Alliance assisted living.
No, we haven't really. I don't think that's a direction that we would be taking. It's really, that's a deeper real estate play. And, I've met with a lot of assisted living operators and owners, and a lot of them are real estate one, assisted living operator second, and then home care is a distant third. We know what we're good at. Home care is what we're good at. And that, so we kind of bring that to the table. And if somebody brings a good living solution to the table, we can sort of partner those two side by side.